Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione, and I just couldn't let the horn sound. It seemed like it was taking forever. There's a lot of hockey going on. We just got to drop the puck.
Let's do it. Let's get to it.
Let's do it. All right. So we're going to have Michael Jello on in about 15 minutes from Hockey Buzz to talk about Babcock. So we'll push Babcock aside for the moment. We'll give some instant reaction to the Ranger-Tampa game. You know, to all those people, and there was probably, 5% of the fan base that wanted to see Cam Talbot and were harping on the fact that Lundqvist had given up 2 6-goal games and all this other nonsense. You knew Lundqvist was going to lock down this game. This is why Henrik Lundqvist is the leader of the Rangers and always will be. Whether he's the captain or not, it doesn't matter. And they only go so far as Henrik Lundqvist takes them. I mean, that's always been the way. It's not going to change. Maybe until he's like 35 years old, it's not going to change. And so that's what it is. Not totally shocked. What it did shock me earlier, and you could let me know what you feel about this, I saw like these poolside shots from Cedric Paquette early in the day, and it raised my eyebrow like, that's not John Cooper style, and I think that was a little fast and loose by Tampa. Now, early on, they hit a few posts and missed a few opportunities, but it does make you wonder, were they a little full of themselves coming into this game?
I don't know. I think maybe – I think you're accounting for one guy here versus the rest of the squad.
True.
I think you're and I don't know if I would expand that throughout the entire roster. Maybe Paquette wasn't completely locked in coming into this one. And listen, you'll find out one way or the other. Tampa's got options in their lineup that they decide they want to, I don't think they're going to sit him, but I'm sure he may have gotten a little bit of Cooper may have gotten into his ear about the thing. Yeah, that wasn't maybe such a good idea to do that, especially when, you want to give the appearance of the team being locked in. So I wouldn't extrapolate it beyond what Paquette did, for himself, but I'm sure probably some of the guys in the locker room said, don't do that again.
Right. I'm thinking that's definitely the case. And look, Ben Bishop had his stinker. I'm watching a lot of people saying he stinks.
Yeah.
You don't stink if you win a
Verona,
rough game. Okay? He had a rough game.
And, listen, Henrik Lundqvist had a rough game in the last game. The difference is you give Lundqvist a little bit more rope because of the fact that he is who he is, whereas Bishop is until he has these sort of runs, people are going to magnify it. But, yeah, 19 saves. I mean, he has let up. Again, it's 5 goals tonight. It's not good. They definitely need more. They need him to be really locked in, especially heading back to Madison Square Garden for game five.
Yeah, they're going to need to now put a little lockdown of their own in because, they were playing pretty fast and loose here, and now that the fast and loose didn't work and now that you don't have the last change, they are going to have to change things up again. No question about it. The bottom line for these two teams right now is it's going to keep going back and forth. We know we're going to a game seven. We just know we are.
I anticipate
it's been
that,
heading there the whole time.
It's like the Titanic heading for an iceberg. Exactly. And I think for Tampa, again, I'm still holding fast to the pick of if it's Tampa's going to win the series, it's going to be in six. If it goes to a seventh game, I'll have a tough time sort of going with them at that point because you're going against a team in New York that's been through game sevens. Now, again, what I'll go back to with New York was, and one of the reasons why my gut was pretty strong on them really locking things down here in game four was the fact that you do not want to be facing a 3-1 deficit in consecutive series and trying to dig out of that hole. So that I think as a team they were definitely focused in on playing well, and certainly Lundqvist, Lundqvist obviously being the key factor with 38 stops.
It's too much.
That's just them drawing the line in the sand and knowing they don't want things to get out of hand and having to climb out of a hole.
No, and that hole would be massive. It would. I mean, it would be pretty awful. And so I like what I saw. And we'll see. We'll see if they come out the same way next game. I mean, right now as much hope as they've had in the last 48 mm-hmm. hours, and you need that. You need that. And so now the fans can sort of quiet down a little bit. And I'll tell you what, now we're going to start hearing that, you know, Brendan Morrow's finished, and I think he's as washed up or more than St. Louis. St. Louis had a nice little bounce back tonight, but I'm not willing to say that he's all cured, but Morrow just killed his team today, killed him.
Yeah, Morrow had a rough game. Compared to the previous game where I thought he had a pretty good effort tonight, I thought he was definitely much more rough around the edges, looked like he was showing his age. Again, he is who he is. He's a fourth, you know, he's a fourth line player at this point.
The one thing I'm getting sick of, and this isn't just with the Rangers, this is with a lot of teams that their goalie is their best player. When teams are up 4-5-1 now, it's just like, hey, let's just take free runs mm-hmm. at the goalie to finish out the game. Well, you know, why not? And the refs, they're doing a decent job of sort of policing it, but you do kind of wish it could mm-hmm. be preemptive, because at some point goalies are going to get hurt. They are.
No, I completely agree with that. And again, it's up to the refs to sort of to make those calls in this case. And if not, then it's going to end up, you know, unfortunately, if the ref doesn't police the game, then the players are going to need to start policing the game, and that could lead to a whole lot of unpleasant things. So, again, these are I have a feeling we'll be hearing a few more whistles, and I'm sure it was probably I have no doubt it was noticed. Certainly, I'm sure by NHL hockey ops noticed that as well towards the end, and there'll probably be a conversation about that in the refs locker room, I would anticipate.
Yeah, I would think so. Okay, so we'll switch to the West for a minute, and I'm worried for the Blackhawks in the sense that the Ducks are playing like the team you thought, you know, not you, but we thought they would be, in the sense that they're a big team. They're hard mm-hmm. to move around some of those bodies. If the goaltending's good, we knew the defense was good. The defense is mobile. They've got young guys like Fowler and Lindholm, and then they've got Beauchemin, who has completely woken up and all of a sudden is stepping mm-hmm. up to the plate. And you know, the blue line for the Blackhawks is compromised. I mean, you know, again, Rumblad is not good when you put Tiemannen in and you only give him 6 minutes. You're not going to get anything out of him. And that is going to, you know, wear those guys down if it hasn't worn them down already.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a possibility of maybe Trevor and Bam Riemsdyk having to go in. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be the tough spot for the Blackhawks here. I really, you know, in terms of how the series goes, they're, you know, if they get down 3-1, I mean, they've been out of holes before, but this team they're up against right now is a different animal, and they're very – and what you really sort of get the feel from that on is the fact of just how much of a chip they're playing with, how motivated they are to take this opportunity and to really sort of establish a legacy for this current generation of Ducks players who have won cups before, but now mm-hmm. they're being asked, you know, guys like Perry, guys like Getz – I mean, Getzlaff has just been an absolute force in this series – so far. I mean,
he's been like a Messier type for his club in that series.
Yeah. Well, I know the bald head makes you think that. I got you.
No, it's not even that. It's the physical play. It's the attitude
now, too.
Do you not, I know. Do you not? And look, if that were the case, I'd be Mark Messier. Do you not see a change in the attitude, too? A little more, not that he wasn't gritty enough, but more
charge.
Leadership?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's large and in charge. Yes, he's playing like the player a lot of people have thought he was going to be in his career, and and he's playing like it now. I mean, he is an absolute table setter for that team. Perry is sort of, you know, again, the pepper pot who gets things stirred up and started, but his skill set is, you know, he's tremendous. And again, they go through the rest of their lineup, and it's just really well balanced. And again, that blue line, you look at it and you say there's no star name on that blue line, but it's such a competent blue line, well balanced in terms of its ability to really sort of keep pressure up on plays, high pressure to keep a high forecheck going, and certainly against Chicago's defense that it's worn down. If you can keep hammering away at them, you're going to get the opportunities to open things up.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is, like, that series, while I think Anaheim will get it in six, they need to get it in 6-2 because you don't want the Blackhawks to be around in a game 7 with all those guys.
Oh,
so
no.
These are good series. These are the right teams. There's nothing boring going on here, and so this is fun. Let's switch gears because, you know, once Mike comes on, we know he's going to talk a lot. Let's switch gears and and talk about the Flyers for a minute. So,
yes.
You know, the Hextall signing, I was at the press conference. I liked it. I like, he's going to be a little like Chip Kelly, and I think the media is going to get a little frustrated because he's never going to give away his game plan. Even months out of his first season, he won't even tell you what kind of team he wants or what players or what kind of anything. So that part aside, we kind of know. I've seen him in college. You've seen him in college. He's going to have a fast system. He's going to have a system where they get the puck out quick. And so I think right now we're seeing Ron Hextall trying to, while he's adding these extra guys, trying to get him guys that complement his system. And Palucha, to me, is a definite guy for that, and maybe a guy that's been overlooked and sort of had to go to the KHL. But the thing is, you know, I look at it, and I think he's definitely played against Hextall. He was in the U.S. system. He was good in the World Juniors. Maybe he had a bad year or two, but this is a guy who could, you know, be a good depth player and really play two-way game as a forward, and you need that.
No, I look at him as a solid swing forward. I mean, the Flyers have had some success with swing forwards coming up from the Phantoms. Vandevelde certainly being one of them, and he's of course played under Hextall in North Dakota. So I think that's the way you have to look at LaPalisage, is the fact that that's the kind of player that they're looking at having. That he's going to be playing at a certain level of pace. And that's one of the things they're going to be looking at, certainly going into the summer with the acquisitions that they could potentially make, and certainly low-level ones considering what their cap situation is going to be. Certainly the acquisition of Medvedev, teaching me how to pronounce his name properly, and the middle part of the name is supposed to be emphasized, obviously, but I can't get my tongue to roll that way, and I'm trying. Certainly, Natasha from Sovietsky Sport will give it to me good when I mispronounce for the first time again this season. She'll nail me on that. But I'm okay with, you know, and I know there's been some criticism, obviously, of the fact that it was a $3 million cap hit for him, and there was some pursuit for him. And I know you have your reservations about him. My whole thing was the fact that he was a 1-year deal, so I don't look at it as major risk. And to me, Hextall must have something in the chute here, possibly by draft time, to move one or more of the defensemen off to fit him in. Again, 32, it's an experiment as much as anything, but it does fit in with what they're trying to do, which is have defensemen who can play with pace and move the and be able to get the puck up the ice. And you're not looking at a guy like him, you know, for big offensive numbers. You're looking at a guy to be able to play two way and to play with pace and get the puck up to the forwards to be able to support the high forecheck system that Hextall wants to put in place. But again, this, we know what this is. It's a transitional thing. It's a transitional thing still, and that's what I think. Hextall's bought himself yet, I think, another year. With as much as the expectations may be, fans are again going to be sort of patient because they know this may be a long-term thing, and that Hextall can get things plugged in. By the time some of the younger players are ready to come up, he's already got a year or two under his belt as well, and understands his way around the NHL too. So it could all be a proper growth pattern here for the Flyers. So again, we'll see.
Yeah, I just say the Medvedev is just a bit more of a risk because he's never really played on North American ice, and definitely not the NHL, and that's always a big deal. Just ask Michael Raffel.
No, that's
he'll
the risk.
It took him half a season. Yeah. So, but we'll, you know, but again, they definitely are going to make moves on the blue line. There's no question about it. They'll make other moves too. I mean, Hextall's going to look down that lineup, and Hextall's going to talk to him and say who fits and who doesn't, and he's going to try and move out the guys who don't. And of course, you know, LeCavier will be one of those guys, and maybe something will happen, or maybe they'll buy him out, or maybe they'll just demote him, or, you know, who knows. But something's going to happen because I don't think he could play in that system.
For anybody who thought that, you know, for anybody who thought that the Flyers were, you know, going to be moving, going to attempt to experiment with Vinny LeCavalier back in a scoring line role, those days are over, guys. Those days are over. It's not just Berube. also everybody. It's also the rest of the organization.
It's organization.
Everybody sees it. The scouts see it. He unfortunately, again, he turns like a, his turning radius is like a bus at this point of his career, and that's one of the things you have to look at there. And again, they can move him. Great. If they can't, then they'll have to figure things out.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to watch. I mean, they're certainly gonna do some things here in the off season, and so they're tinkering. And all right, so now we're going to switch gears, and we're going to invite in Mike Augello, and Mike is going to tell us about all about the Mike Babcock press conference. Mike, how are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. I am fine, and I'm sure you're very pleased at the 5-1 victory by the Rangers.
Yeah,
and
that
yes.
was good. I'll tell you, we're very happy that you've decided to put us like sixth on the list and come on the show and talk about it. I'm just kidding. You've been a busy guy. Give us your overview. Now that you've had 2 days to think about it, has your opinion changed at all? Has the PR that the Leafs have been putting out there worn off a little? You know, where are you at right now?
No, I mean, I am fairly confident that the Leafs are going to continue down the road that they have, you know, I think been on since late February when it came out that Brendan Shanahan had presented to the board of MLS&E that he wanted to completely tear down the roster. Now, it doesn't seem that it's consistent with the fact that you're bringing in one of the winningest coaches and one of the best coaches in the league in Mike Babcock and spending $6.25 million on an 8-year deal. But I think one of the reasons there is an 8-year deal is because the first 2 or 3 years, this team is going to be probably worse than they were this year.
Fair
yeah,
enough.
Mike. Certainly, it's going to be an interesting marriage. At least, certainly at the start. I guess the obvious question that you know that I'm sure is percolating through people's minds is how Phil Kessel will work with Mike Babcock. At least in terms of going into the first year, if you had to sort of project forward in terms of what Mike demands versus the kind of player that Phil is, if you had to sort of look in your crystal ball, what do you think might happen there?
Well, I would really be shocked if Phil Kessel is at training camp in September. I mean, it was, you know, it seemed as if that the writing was on the wall, but based on the fact that he had the worst year of his career, and, you know, he still scored, I think it was 25 goals. You know, he was top 10 in NHL scoring 3 years in a row before that. Phil Kessel and, you know, his off-season habits, his, you know, in-season habits, his personality don't seem to work well with Toronto, and I don't think they work well with what I understand is of what Babcock expects from his players. He's a sniper. He's not a 200-foot player. I know that there are skilled players who aren't exactly, you know, Bob Gainey who play for the Detroit Red Wings, but, you know, you do expect your star players who play 20 minutes a night to come back into the defensive zone. And in the, I think it's now 6 years that Kessel's been in Toronto, that's been, you know, very rare that he does put a lot of effort in his defensive play. He's a guy who likes to streak down the wing and score goals, and he's very good at it. But Babcock will expect him, or would expect him, if he is around, to play a two-way game. I don't think he will, so I don't think he'll be around. I think Brendan Shanahan is going to do his utmost to move him before September.
I'll just say this. I still have that little bit of jadedness that I did the other day, and I'm taking that wait-and-see attitude based on the fact that things change, people change, GMs never tell the truth. And until at the draft they actually announce the Leafs making the pick and they're up on the stage, I'll be very interested to see if they don't, you know, trade down, trade out of it, do something, make a deal. And so we'll see, because I do think that while Toronto fans may be on board with this move and continuing the rebuild, I also think they can't field a complete team of AHLers while all their best players are going to be playing for the Marlies. I don't think that's going to sit well with the fans for, you know, 3 seasons, let's say. So I think they're still going to have to be active in other ways, too.
I mean, Russ, you may be right. I mean, the apprehension is justified because this team has done this many a time. They've sold the rebuild and then not gone through with it. You know, the
yeah.
Brian Burke example is the most recent one. I mean, 2008,
yeah.
he comes in. He's the guy. Let's, you know, we're going to build a team with truculence and testosterone and whatever. And he ends up, you know, signing Tim Connolly, trading for Phil Kessel. I mean, the team and the words that he put together didn't match. And, you know, he didn't build a team through the draft. He traded two draft picks for Kessel, and one of them turned out to be Tyler Seguin. So, you know, his words and his deeds and what he promised to bring to Toronto didn't match, and that was, his, I think, the seeds of his downfall. And I think the, you know, the signings of Kessel and Phaneuf by Dave Nonis did the same thing. Brendan Shanahan has got the support of the fans in Toronto. He has the support of the organization, I mean the board of MLS&E, and now has Mike Babcock coming in and saying he wants to do the same thing. If they don't do it now, they will never do it.
Mike, in looking at the open general manager situation, I know you a lot of people have alluded to, you know, some potential outside people coming in, but you seem to lean towards, and I'm kind of in the same boat as well, that Toronto may be looking to have that happen potentially from within their own organization. So talk mm-hmm. a little bit about that.
Well, the only thing that I'm skeptical about in terms of Mark Hunter taking over as general manager is if that was the case, they would do it already. You know, I mean, he's taken on some of the responsibilities that Dave Nonis, you know, vacated when he was dismissed. You know, Kyle Dubas has taken on more of a responsibility. Shanahan is pitching in. You know, if the plan was to make Mark Hunter the general manager, I would think they would have done it by now. Plus, some of these external candidates like George McPhee or Sean Burke, who don't have an affiliation with another NHL club, if they were serious candidates, I would think they would be in the position already. But that's why I think that someone like Mike Fiuta from the LA Kings, or you know, Julian Brisebois or Pat Verbeek with Tampa Bay, or even Jeff Gorton, but I don't think that's realistic, are the people that Shanahan wanted to talk to before they make the final decision. So I think it's 50-50 right now.
Yeah, I think the Jeff Gorton is not going to happen because the Bruins moved on from that because Seder wasn't going to let it happen. And I just had that feeling that this is the off season that Seder becomes the team president for the Rangers. And then as far as Michael Fiuta goes, I really do think he's happy enough in L.A. waiting out that particular job. And if he likes it there and his family's happy there, I don't know if he's really going to pick up and move just for money like Mike Babcock did. He could. Listen, everybody's got a price, yeah. But I think the Leafs will have a limit to what they're going to spend front office-wise, too. I know there is no cap for it, but there's always consequences. And so first year it looks great, and then, you know, you have to see how it works over time. But, you know, it's an interesting thing with the Leafs, and it'll certainly get them to be talked about a lot this year, but there's also going to probably be, you know, Leafs fans are going to have to put up with probably a lot of jokes and a lot of ribbing about how everything's going, and not that they're not used to that already. But
yeah, I was going to say, like they haven't been taking some jokes the last 46 years. I mean, this is,
I know,
you know, this team is the butt of most other teams' jokes. So I mean,
but
I
kind of wonder.
I think,
here's what I wonder, though, Mike, and then Anthony, you could even comment on this one too before Mike. I kind of wonder how long the Toronto media is going to play along with this. They'll be on good behavior for at least a part of this year, if not for the whole year, but I do kind of wonder when they're going to sort of put their foot down and say, okay, sort of like what some of the Philly media is doing now with the Sixers. What do you think, Ant?
I mean, there's always – in year one, certainly, there's going to be – as you said, there's going to be certainly a little bit of a honeymoon period, I think, initially at the start. Mm-hmm. The fact that they at least got their guy and, you know, he's the biggest fish in the market. that's going to be the assumption, at least in year one. I think that it's going to be sort of, let's continue. And going into year two, you want to certainly see that there's potentially some progress after that. So the patience level of the Toronto media, that's the direction you're going to, certainly in year two, you're going to start hearing a little bit of saber rattling, so to speak. Sorry, Mike, I know you're in Buffalo and everything, but I did have to use saber rattling there. But you will definitely be, I think that you'll start to hear that cacophony start to get a little louder in year two. And certainly in year three, there's definitely not an upward sweep where that'll get a whole lot louder. So the interesting thing I did want to throw in there as well with regards to food, as Mike had sort of alluded to, and I think we mentioned this as well, the fact that in L.A. you do have Rob Blake possibly in position there as well. And that's one of the reasons why Fuda might be considering going over to Toronto as well. But that's one of the things I just want to sort of consider in the fact that there is another layer in L.A. that potentially Fuda would have to jump if he was going to wait out the L.A. job. So that's one of the reasons why I think Mike is – I think Mike is mentioning food. I think it's closer to legit than maybe we think in that circumstance.
Yeah, in regards to the Toronto media, there will be, outliers. There will be people who will, I think, ridicule them right off the bat. I mean, there's already commentators, who work for companies who are part of the ownership of MLS&E who own the Leafs, that are saying, they're not going to do this, that they're going to keep Kessel, they're going to keep Phaneuf, they're going to try to make the playoffs, and so already it's there's a splintering. But I think that was why, curiously, like every 2 minutes, Shanahan or Babcock said, we're going to go through this, we're going to do the rebuild, we're going to take on the pain, the pain is coming. Honestly, if they don't do it, they look like a bunch of jackasses, and I just don't think that they're going to expose themselves to look that way after saying over and over and over again that they're going to do the rebuild. They have to do the rebuild, and they have
But here's devil's advocate. So, I'm Jim Rutherford. Hey, you interested in Malkin? Or, all of a sudden, they may get a call from, let's say it's Carolina. Hey, you interested in Eric Staal? Or whatever, and they're going to be fielding some of those kinds of calls now because they're a low-cap team, and they, other GMs are going to sense that with Babcock there, he might get itchy at some point, and they're going to have to keeping that at arm's length. That's going to be a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I agree, and Shanahan brought up the situation in the press conference. He said, somebody floated the scenario. I think it was Ken Campbell, the Hockey News, floated the scenario of the Leafs being 4 points out of a playoff spot at the next year's trade deadline. And would Mike Babcock come to Shanahan and say, let's make that trade to get the rent-a-player? And Shanahan said, well, Babcock actually presented a scenario like that to me, finding out whether we would have, MLS&E and the management would have the cojones to not make that deal. So, to me, that sounds like he's on board, and it sounds like, that's the plan that Shanahan has. So I don't think that temptation is going to be there unless Ron Francis is interested in getting Eric Staal up for the rights to Colton Moore.
And just for people that are listening live, you can come back. We'll probably go a couple minutes overtime. Yeah, I get that. And then I'll bring up a scenario that I did earlier in the week, and Anthony, you could talk about it too, but let's just say, they would bring up Antoine Bebo. There's an injury, they bring him up, and he wins 15 or 20 in a row. And then all of a sudden, they're finding themselves in the position next year where they're all of a sudden winning. So now, are they going to not try and win?
That's a scenario that could happen. I mean, Andrew Hammond came up because of injury and won, 25 games.
Yeah.
I just don't see, I actually see them, if it comes to that, I see them calling up Christopher Gibson and not calling up their top prospect, Antoine Bebo. They want to keep their prospects down in the American Hockey League and let them get experience and not expose them. And, I think Bebo is not ready for NHL competition at this point.
No, and
he
probably isn't. I just used his name, though.
Right, yeah. I mean, there will be temptations to bring up William Neal in there. There will be temptations to bring up Connor Brown and Brandon Leipzig. Unless they're paying lip service, they will not call them up. They will keep them down in the AHL.
Yeah, I would agree with Mike in this circumstance that I think there's definitely a long term situation here now. Again, if it's an emergency situation where where you catch lightning in a bottle with a player a la Hammond, but I don't think it changes your overall blueprint of what you're trying to build over the long haul. I think in Toronto, which again
might
is you're trying
your drafting
to get
position. That's what it might change. Like Ottawa's drafting position. All the change. Yeah,
it changed. But again, if you've got confidence in your scouting staff, especially if you got a deep draft year like this year is, or subsequent years down the line, you got to trust your scouting department, and you got to trust that you have to trust that you're going to be able to get players and develop and be able to develop them and have them ready to go for when you're looking for a longer level of sustained success.
And that's the last part of this equation, right, Mike? Is the fact that now Mike Babcock is basically dependent on a very new group with not a lot of experience in the NHL to get the right young players and have them all develop, and hopefully there won't be injuries like in Columbus, or otherwise the best of plans could get derailed. Doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah, I mean, he's there to establish a structure, to establish, a consistent effort, or, the point A, the point B, what he wants his players to do, come in shape, be prepared to play this way, and, just set an agenda for the future in terms of playing winning hockey. Now, the thing is, he does not have the pieces, and he probably will not have the pieces for a few years. One thing Shanahan said was, I didn't want to bring in a coach for 2 or 3 years who was going to be sort of a placeholder and, finish 29th or 30th and then not have guys like Morgan Riley and Nazem Kadri, not have the benefit of a coach who would, show them the way to go. That's one of the benefits of Babcock, is that he's going to help those young players, become better pros. And hopefully when this team is ready to contend in 4 or 5 years, that the centerpieces will be guys like Morgan Riley and potentially Nazem Kadri and James Van Riemsdyk.
And you got anything else?
Good to go.
All right. Well, I will say this. My final statement is I would think Mike Babcock's already been in touch with a colorist in Toronto, because I would think he's going to have to be coloring up a lot more grays in the next few years. And maybe there's even one in that nice, shiny new condo he's going to be living in downtown. I hope it is. He's a good guy. His press conferences will certainly be interesting, especially if they all of a sudden do start to win. He'll have to answer a lot of snarky media questions for sure. But anyhow, Mike, thanks for coming on. I mean, now you finally get to sleep and then maybe do another 6-7 interviews tomorrow.
My pleasure, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Mike.
And that's going to be it for this Off the Post, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.